I hope to give you a sense of the research on which this has been built. This is actually built on some of our earlier research on local governance. And in fact, the idea actually came out of the need that we felt to re-theorize local governance in India. Now, one of the things that really struck us when we interviewed a large number of women in local governance, leaders in local governance, is that a number of them have actually become extremely interested in public life, as well as acquired a lot of knowledge necessary for that. And they identified knowledge as an important part of how the confidence came to them. But again, we noticed that what they were referring to as knowledge was usually to do with government orders, the skill to read and translate government orders into action. So this had its benefits, but was a strictly limited conception of knowledge anyway. And more distressingly, what we found was, despite the fact that these women had performed extremely well in their local areas and had gained a great deal of local acceptance across political parties, not a single political party has been interested in actually promoting them as politicians. So they were simply denied, they're still being denied access to the upper echelons of politics. So this was something that was quite worrying to us. Now, and so that actually forced us to, in a sense, re-theorize local governance because if you look at it, see, in fact, when we were working for this project, I noticed that there's a strange commonality of features between local governance in India, especially in Kerala, and several features of the information intensive service sector. In both, you would find that a central characteristic is the heightening need for expertise, knowledge, judgment, discretion towards producing a certain outcome. In local governance, it's welfare. In the information sector, it's a kind of technological product. Then the skills required from women in both sectors are usually contextual and social. When women are in both sectors, women are actually better integrated into the public than earlier, but their positions tend to be temporary and always threatened. The division between, now this sounds preposterous, I know, but I think there's a connection. The division between, masculinized and male-dominated higher sectors and feminized, female-populated and feminized lower sectors is common to both. Again, despite the poor heavy workloads and poor job security, in both these sectors, you'd find that women actually find relatively better levels of self-esteem. Now, what I read from this is that across neoliberal political, economic, and political orders, there seems to be an emergent regime which is highly gendered, which consigns women to the bottom of the hierarchies. And despite all our rhetoric about local governance being constitutionally mandated and so on, there seems to be a global political order which shares very common kinds of gendering with the neoliberal economic order. So once we re-theorized governance like that, I think we were also forced to take a critical look at the feminist engagement with local governance. Now, in Kerala at least, the feminist engagement has been mostly around gender training and knowledge-related gender mainstreaming activities in planning, budgeting, or setting up local gender justice councils in villages, and so on. So basically, interventions that would help the council, the women leaders, to function a little better in the panchayats within the terms set by local governance. Now, of course, one can understand this. If you one is using Hannah Arendt's language, then the new economic and political order, the worlds of work and labor have somehow come together more closely, and these worlds The feminists have helped to try, and the feminists themselves locate themselves in, of course, the world of action, the Arendtian world of action. And they are trying to break down these boundaries between work, labor, and action by intervening in these kinds of things. Nevertheless, what happens, I think, I don't think feminists in Kerala at least have succeeded in doing that, because on the one hand, you know, if you think about feminist political action, for example, against leading politicians, sexual violence, and so on, the feminists always reach out and try to garner support from women in high politics, the leading politicians who are MLAs or MPs, but never ever consider reaching out to the leaders in the panchayats. So in that way, there is a perpetuation of this division between high politics and local governance. And on the other hand, there is, this is inadvertent, perhaps, I mean, not certainly not perpetuated on purpose. On the other hand, there is also this certain pedagogic mode and a non-reciprocal relationship by which feminists enter panchayats as gender trainers and in other capacities, but very rarely is a reciprocal relationship available there. We thought, I mean, when we re-theorized local governance, we thought that these are, you know, there is therefore a need to seriously relook at the feminist engagement in politics, and that's how this whole idea appeared to be very vital for us. And we also thought that the ICTs were an important way in which we could overcome several of the issues that stood in our way. In many of these features of ICTs, of course, we have heard since morning, have had basically politically ambiguous kinds of effects. Now, we have been thinking of how, of the possibility of using those possibilities in a subversive kind of way. For example, by exploiting, I just want to mention three. By exploiting precisely the deterritorialized nature of the spaces of communication and network society is one, because in Kerala, the major impediment before bringing, trying to engage with the women leaders is political affiliations across the Kerala. So it's very important for us to somehow find a space that is not really, you know, that is does not have the same features as the political space in Kerala, the space of politics in Kerala. So perhaps the ICTs allow us to, you know, use deterritorialization of space to other ends. The second thing is the multiplicity that is promoted by the internet. Again, we have enough reason to think about its ambiguous effects. But in this case, I think it's very important for us to use it precisely to overcome the pedagogic non-reciprocal relationship, because an ICT model allows us to bring in other modes, other nodes, you know, into the website, and not just have us sitting there at the center offering lessons whatsoever to women in the panchayats, but connecting, but making this into a space which will connect up with several different kinds of organizations, agencies, people who can then come in and interact, and it becomes a space of interaction and becomes a shifting center. You know, the according to the flows from the different nodes, then the center will also probably shift in its character. So it will be a kind of flexible space. And thirdly, by strategically redeploying the possibility of individuation that internet allows. That is, I mean, we all talk about it very often in terms of the hyper-individualism. But I just want to hope, we are just hoping that we can use this space to actually further strategically redeploy the possibility of the practice of the self in digital sale, in digital space. Now, for example, the internet does offer this possibility because it allows people to write. And modern literature has always held this possibility, as Derrida has once so wonderfully pointed out, that it is an opportunity and which is being taken by more and more marginalized people, which has raised autobiography into a respectable literary genre. So in the same way, we're hoping that the space will also allow women to write themselves, you know, write oneself. And in that sense, strengthen their own individuation, in the processes of individuation, which is already underway. So, and but then I, as Aarti just pointed out to you in detail, I just want to end by saying this, it is not just the subversive deployment of already existing possibilities that, you know, we are also talking about a process of co-creation, you know, by which the very design itself evolves from a continuous engagement between the online and the offline context. So the what is usually assumed to be a passive relation, I mean, we all take it for granted, we are progressive people, we are in the net, we will carry that progressiveness with us. It's a passive kind of connection. But what we want to do is to try and see if that connection can be made into an active and self-reflexive connection. Now, my own confidence about this comes from my own writing of a book of history it's an anti-gender training book, by the way. It's a book of history which is academic, completely academic. The language, of course, is different, but the content, the ideas all come from academic research, but written through precisely this process of going to colleges and women's reading groups, talking to them, finding out what they want to know about the history of women in Kerala, then creating a chapterization from that material, and then putting the book has done so well. In fact, we put it up for free download on the CDS website. It has worked so amazingly well. We have been able to bypass all the publication industry completely, the reviewing industry including. So, I mean, that's what gives me the confidence personally to venture into something like that. And as Binita told you yesterday, we are in no position to tell you where we are going to reach, but hopefully we will do well. Thanks.